Welcome to Sketchbook Podcast, a discussion about inspiration and process with artists, creators, and designers. I'm your host, Daniel Montoya Jr. On Monday, November 27th, 1989, George Herbert Walker Bush was president. In that special week of November, people in the United States were listening to Blame It on the Rain by Milli Vanilli. In the UK, You Got It, The Right Stuff by New Kids on the Block was in the top five hits. Christmas Vacation, starring Chevy Chase, was one of the most viewed movies, and Alien Nation was one of the most popular TV series of the year. And in Southfield, Michigan, home of the Mixing Bowl, Jeffrey Aaron Sperling was born. Jeffrey Sperling graduated from Indiana University Bloomington with a Bachelor of the Arts. Jeffrey has been a performing member and currently is an alumni of Interplay, Zydeco, and the Pride of Cincinnati Winter Guards. In 2011, Jeffrey ended his eight-year DCI career as a performing member with the Blue Devils Drum and Bugle Corps, where he was a part of the George Zingali Best Color Guard award-winning cast. Prior to that, Jeffrey was a marching member with the Cadets, Blue Coats, Hawthorne Caballeros, Capital Regiment, Racing Kilties, and the Pioneer Drum and Bugle Corps. Jeffrey was an integral part of the design staff at Cedar Ridge High School. During his time at Cedar Ridge, the marching band made its inaugural appearance in the Bands of America Grand National Finals. The Winter Guard received a Scholastic A bronze medal in the Texas Color Guard circuit and made finals at all WGI regional appearances. He served as the director of color guards at New Braunfels High School, and in 2015, the Winter Guard was named the WGI San Antonio Regional A-Class Champion and were regional A-Class Silver Medalists within the Texas Educational Color Guard Association. Outside of his involvement with scholastic programs, Jeffrey has served as choreographer for the Spirit of Atlanta Drum and Bugle Corps, the Louisiana Stars Drum and Bugle Corps, and Genesis Drum and Bugle Corps. Jeffrey has also choreographed for White Gold, Industry Independent, and Spirit Independent Winter Guard. Jeffrey has been a U.S. Bands adjudicator since 2013 in the caption of Color Guard. Presently, Jeffrey serves as a co-director for Origins Color Guard, an independent open-class Winter Guard based out of Austin, Texas, and leads Sperling Designs, a one-stop shop for custom marching band, color guard, and winter guard design. Wow, that's a lot of drum corps. Jeffrey, why you march so much drum corps?
I loved it.
That, I guess it could be worse. You could say, oh, I had no choice. I hated it and just had to go back. Thank you, sir. Can I have another?
No. Oh, my God. I loved it. I actually, like, it's funny. I actually did not want to do marching band at all. I did it because, so my dad was my principal, right? And there's an elective you have to take, like, band for, like, one semester.
Right.
And I just remember, you know, we were doing Wizard of Oz, you know, and young little 13-year-old Jeffrey, like, you know, in Indiana, it's just a different way of qualifying than in Texas. And we had just finished, I believe it's called Region. It's been a few years since I lived in Indiana.
Right.
But, you know, I'm on the bus, I'm crying. I go home that night and I get on what used to be called IndianaMarching.com.
Right. And yeah, shout out IM.com.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, like, write on the forum and I'm like, you know, I'm in love with this. You know, is there all year round marching band? And they go,
wow,
no, there's not. But there's this thing called drum corps. So I'm like, cool. Well, what, like, which one should I do? So, you know, because they were like Cavaliers, Glassmen, or Pioneer. That's right. What they told me. So I was like, I don't know anything about it. Someone tell me where to go.
Yeah.
So they were like, go to Pioneer.
Yes, of course.
So my first camp, this is back, I was a soprano player. We were back in G Bugles. We were in Waukesha, Wisconsin.
Whoa.
There is 23 horn players in a band room. And I was in love. I thought it was the loudest thing I've ever heard.
23.
Yeah. And really all my passion stemmed from there. You know, I still remember at my first camp, someone talking about SCV and I was like, oh, I think my sister drives that. true story. But I just loved it. You know, I loved Pioneer, and then I made friends at Capital Regiment. And then from there, I went on to Blue Coats. And then following Blue Coats, I met Byron Valentine, the incredible designer. And he kind of led me into Zydeco. And then from there, I met Allison, who's now Allison Blakenship. She used to be Allison Hunyadi. She was the captain of the cadets. And she was like, should try out. So I went there. I was like, I'm going to do cadets or I'm going to do Cavaliers.
Sure.
So I tried out at cadets and I just remember my first camp. Like, so I would have essentially just started Winter Guard or like Color Guard 2 years prior.
Okay.
And I walked in and their rifles were like logs and they were like, do, you know, one and one, which is 100 drop zones on either hand. Oh, and okay. I couldn't do it, you know? And then meanwhile, you know, flash forward, like later that day, April's like, boys, toss a six and do a sit roll. It's going in the show. So here I am just hucking and chucking wood into the air. Luckily I was on my parents' insurance at the time. Yeah. And I fell in love with it. I worked really hard and, you know, I stayed there for 3 years. I did the whole little Jeffrey stint. And, then when it came to my age, I think that when I used to march, people used to go places. It's like being an instrumentalist. You go to places because you know who does the studio. You know what I mean?
Yeah, uh-huh.
I feel like that's very different nowadays. People go places based on branding.
Yes.
And that's not like across the board. There's obviously exceptions, but I felt like I had 1 year left in my education. I knew that I wouldn't have another opportunity there. And so I just really wanted to learn from Scott. Mm-hmm. You know, the irony of it is I felt like I really didn't actually get to learn from Scott at all. I learned from someone I had no idea about before I joined, TJ Doucette, mm-hmm, who she made Color Guard into an academic. Mm. You know what I mean? Like the way she talked about it was just so calculated and methodical and pragmatic. And I loved it. I ate it up, you know, and I had such a great experience there. But yeah, I mean, every year, I mean, I always considered myself, it was weird. I never had a single summer from high school through college off. So I always considered myself 3 months on, 9 months off. You know what I mean? Like yeah, even with Winter Guard, I mean, just, I love outdoor, you know, Winter Guard is incredible and it's just a different energy. But for me, there was just something about traveling across the country and being with the people that I was, and just being able to share my passion. I always tell my students, you know, this might be the closest to fame you ever feel, you know,
the television series fame, the movie fame.
No.
Oh, you mean
I've never seen that either.
What? You're busting all my stereotypes. I got to change my notes here.
Oh my God. There's so many things I haven't seen. I haven't seen Footloose. I've never seen Casablanca. I've never seen Death Becomes Her. I've never seen, oh my God, there's like a million. Actually, I've never seen The Godfather. Like there's so many old movies. Yes. Uh-huh. I have to go on this like retro like movie hunt to catch up. But yeah.
That was the closest to fame they'll ever get.
Yeah, so that's the closest to fame that some people ever get. You know what I mean? Like after the pageantry arts, you know, people move into other things with their life, you know? And sometimes that is what, that experience of being able to stand on the field or stand on the floor and like get that external reward of, you know, thunderous applause and just, you know, feel so fulfilled in that moment. I mean, it's just something that you can't describe. Someone has to experience for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that, like really that one ending moment was all the reason to do it again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Little Jeffrey. Were you a Toys R Us kid?
I was a Toys R Us kid, actually.
Yes.
No, Little Jeffrey was a character in the Cadets 2010 show Toy Soldier.
Correct.
So I actually didn't start out in that role either.
Oh.
I like came to November camp. I found out there was a soloist and I asked and I remember Greg at the time saying, no. And, you know, I came back in April and I was like, have you given that any thought? And he's like, no, you need to be in the weapon line. And I just remember it was about midway through spring training that, the person they had brought in, just maybe wasn't where they wanted them to be from a projection standpoint. So they had asked me, I said, yes. And it was certainly an experience unlike any other.
I would imagine. Yes. I've seen all the pictures I've seen of you. You're very, you project, you emote. Like that's gotta be the picture you show kids when you tell them that it has to reach the box. Cause I think when I see you, that you're reaching the box, that's for sure.
I actually never show anyone that.
Really?
To be honest. Yeah, I think that, I don't know if this will go on the recording, but
we'll find out.
I think that when you hear the word soloist, you know, everyone immediately wants to do it. You know, especially like when you're younger, you're like, oh my God, I'm going to stand out. People are going to see me. They're going to recognize me. And the reality of that, especially when you're a lone soloist, is just very different, you know, especially during tour. I mean, tour just comes already with its natural, you know, ups and downs of your emotional journey. Mm-hmm. But you find yourself extremely isolated. You know, like you don't have anyone to really talk to about what you're going through because everyone wants to be that character. You know, everyone wants that opportunity. Whether they, I'm not saying everyone wants to be you, but everyone wants that opportunity, or maybe I shouldn't say everyone. I feel like a lot of people, you know what I mean? Yeah. In a performance activity, they want that opportunity to be able to stand out.
Correct. Yeah.
And it just was really mentally taxing. You know, there was so many times that there were, I opened up to people only to kind of have that used against me, if that makes sense. And there were times that, like, you know, after the show, you only have so many times, especially with the cadets, that you can like see other people.
Right. Cause you were so, at that time you were playing often at the end of the night.
Yeah. So it was, you know, I would want to go to the lot and see my friends, and it was like, no, you have to go to the Suvies, and like, and you have to sell and you have to sign. And I totally understand it. And I think that there is a person that, you know, they would eat that up, you know, they would do that. I just found that at that point in time, I wanted the role without truly understanding everything that came with it. And so I guess looking back, I could say that my mindset was a bit immature, if that makes sense. You know, I wish I would have been maybe a little bit more dedicated to all the extras that went with it, if that makes sense. But I mean, I love the organization. You know, I had such an amazing 3 years. I mean, truthfully, out of all of my drum corps and marching experience, that's probably the organization that shaped me the most.
Wow. So you, basically, it sounds like you and the two female soloists from the Madison Scouts over the last 10 years would be the only ones that understand this isolation that you're talking about. Not just because they were the lone females, but they were like, a show was built around Carmen. The show was built around the heart and soul person. The show was built around little Jeffrey. It's kind of like U.S. presidents. There's only 4 or 5 people in the world at any given time that understand what it was like to have that experience. I suppose that's interesting. You're right, because I would imagine, like, oh my God, that person's the star of the show. They must be, oh my God, they're the lead singer. That's got to be amazing. And you never really stop to think that there might be a negative to it all. So, wow, that's interesting to hear. So you touched on it a little bit, but I'm curious, if you were the face of the cadets that year, for better or for worse. You know, there's internet forums, there's things all over the place. You know, what was it like being, I don't know if all the pamphlets had your picture of your face on it, or you dancing or jumping, like, what's that like?
So there's actually, I still have one in my bedside table. There was a pin that said, I heart my Jeffrey. I heart little Jeffrey. One of those things. It had my face on it. Yeah. And they had flags with my face on it. I mean, really, it's surreal. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, to be honest, just because, again, out of my 3 years there, that was, I would say actually my favorite year there was The Pursuit of Happiness.
Oh, yeah.
I know that West Side Story was amazing. But I really think that the people in that 2008 cast just made all the difference for me. I marched with some of the most hilarious individuals that went on. You know, some of them are still performing phenomenal. But yeah, being in that role, it's crazy. I don't really think a lot. I guess the weight of my thought doesn't really lie on all the Suvies or things that have my name. I just remember I was off for basically 2 rehearsal blocks out of 3. So I would like sew flags and tape flag bags and get staff drinks. Those are the things I remember.
Those are what you remember. Oh.
One time I gave April Gilligan a foot massage.
Oh, wow. Is that a part of your job offering?
It's actually
Swirling Designs?
On my resume.
Is it really? Wow, yeah, that's the first thing.
Under accolades.
This is fantastic. Jeffrey, where is your favorite place to go apple picking?
Really, it's in Michigan, I would say. I mean, the fall, I grew up in Detroit.
The D. It's so cold in the D.
Right. My favorite brewery's there, though. Shout out to Founders.
Take your word for it.
Yeah, they have a great breakfast stout. I recommend it.
And what city is that in? Is
it Detroit? They have the original ones in Grand Rapids, but they just built one in Detroit.
Okay.
But I actually just, Northwest Indiana, you know, that's where my parents live, and I just got back from there.
Yes, that's why I asked that question.
Yeah.
I do my research.
Right. Well, you know, people, one of the things when I'm trying to get to know my cast is, you know, you ask questions like, what's your favorite food? You know what I mean? Or things like that. Things very surface level. You know, you don't want to like go in and be like, what's your most traumatic memory?
Yes. Oh, yes, please.
And for me, it's always applesauce because, you know, my family didn't have like a lot of traditions per se.
Sure.
But the one thing that we always did is we got together and we still do. We get together in the fall, we go apple picking, and my mom, one of the only things she can cook, sorry, mom, was applesauce, you know, like she taught us. I actually literally just bought, because she makes it in like essentially a tomato press, like what you'd make tomato sauce from.
Sure, okay.
So I actually just bought it because I'd like to teach my roommates and continue that tradition, but it's something that I hold really near and dear to my heart.
Wow. Have you been to Uncle John's Cider Mill in Michigan? Up 281, I think.
No.
North of Lansing. I went to Central Michigan for a master's. So that's the only reason why I know Apple
Johns. Chippewas.
The Fighting Chippewas.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah. You ever been to Mount Pleasant?
I have.
Oh.
I auditioned for that music school.
Did you really?
Yeah. Oh. So my first year going into school for undergrad. So I majored in gender studies and sociology. I double majored. Okay. And I really, my career goal was actually to become a sex therapist. It's my second passion. When I moved to Texas, I was actually still pursuing it. So I was certified in the state of Texas to test for HIV because I was trying. You have to go to Dallas and like do all that. Okay. But my internships and all that is in HIV prevention and awareness.
Okay.
Because I just think that, you know, education is really important
to
this community.
Of course. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I lived in Tel Aviv and So for like 3 months and I did an internship. The gay center in Tel Aviv, Yafo. And, that's my second passion, but how did we get here?
Uncle John's Cider Mill, Central Michigan. Script is all blown at this point.
Right. Well, so I auditioned for that music school because graduating high school, I thought I wanted to go to become a band director.
Gotcha.
I realized after about a semester in Indiana University that I had a passion to make other people better. I didn't necessarily have a passion to make myself better. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one night in the music annex, I'm just like, you know, 2 a.m. practicing and I'm like, this is not going to work.
Right.
You know, so...
So you play soprano, which means you're a trumpet player.
I was a trumpet player.
When's the last time you played your instrument?
You know, usually whenever I'm like around a band and someone has a trumpet, I'll pick it up and I'll play like Land of a Thousand Dances. Or you know what I mean? Like
a staple,
the one thing. Yes. Exactly. You know, I'll play a scale and people will be like, wow.
That's right. Well, the fact that you are a color guard person, quote unquote, and you can read music, you're the second person that I've talked to. By this point, the Jen Barton podcast would have already been live, and she can read. She has a degree in flute, like she's a music educator. So it's the stereotype on my part that color guard people, visual designers, can't read music. So that's, you're busting down the barriers for everybody. Good for you.
Well, I mean, I think that the best type of designer is a versatile designer. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the things that I'm good at, you know, I always have room to grow, but there's so many things that, you know, I'm always open and transparent about when I work with a client that I say, you know, if you have a great in-house music staff, then like I will help you get the visual end where it needs to go. Mm-hmm. But if you need music help, I'm maybe not the person for you.
Sure, sure.
You know, mm-hmm. and I just try to be as transparent as possible. There's always things within the music ensemble caption and the music effect caption that I'm still learning to this day, you know, mm-hmm. I will continue to learn. But yeah, I read music, I read a score, you know, I always ask people, I can't read drum parts, but I do ask when I'm working on programming sheets that people send me their win score.
Wow. That's incredible. Jeffrey, tell us about Artie.
Oh, Artie. Artie is, he just had a birthday.
Did he really? How old is Artie?
He is, okay, so this is weird. He's 8 years and 3 months. Okay. We adopted him when he was a year and 3 months.
Oh, so you...
Yeah, yeah, so we still celebrate the birthday, though, when we adopted him, which was October 10th.
Okay.
So, yeah, I just got him a new bed and some new water bowls and, like, a cookie. I went to Tomlinson's off Breaker. He's great. He's a Chiweenie, so he's a Chihuahua dachshund. He's basically passive like a cat.
Sure.
I mean, occasionally he'll try to, like, fool everyone into thinking that he plays, but he usually just snuggles. He's awesome. He is like the coolest. I actually went in to, oh my God, I don't even know the acronym. It's a pound in town. And it's like, I was going to say the ISPCA.
the Austin ASA.
ASPA or whatever. It's off of Lamar.
Yes. You know Pets Alive? Austin Pets Alive? Nope. I think it's the ASCPA, maybe. Austin? It looks like, well, that's a poison control
probably,
as I look at it.
It's like 183 in Lamar.
Yeah.
But I actually went in because, like, my dream dog is a Rhodesian Ridgeback.
A what?
A Rhodesian Ridgeback. They're these, I would say they're medium. Some people might classify them as a larger dog, but they have, like, a ridge up their spine. They're pretty identifiable. Okay. But they were groomed back in the day, believe it or not, to be lion hunting dogs.
What?
Yeah, that's not my, like, appeal, but... I just think they're gorgeous.
Sure.
You know, they're just really awesome. Either that or like, golden retriever, like a female one specifically.
Okay.
But I walked in and I turned the corner and there was Artie. And I remember specifically calling my dad and asking him for, his blessing, which was really more like, can I have your wallet? Cause at the time, you know, I just, you know, animals are expensive. And so they at the time I just wanted to make sure that if I took on that commitment that I could honor it. But yeah, I fell in love. I came home that night. I told my partner at the time, I said, I got this dog and if you don't like it, move out. And he ended up falling more in love with the dog than I did.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, who wins in a color guard pageantry pup contest? You or Bodie, Tim Newborn's dog?
You know, I've never met Bodie, to be honest, but I actually have two dogs.
Oh, you have another one?
Yeah.
Which other one?
His name is Leo.
Leo.
Leo El Diablo Sperling. Because he actually, so Artie's dad was Hispanic. So his name is actually Arthur Augustus Aslan Ketchadorian something something Sperling Gonzalez Winters, which is just a collection of names. Leo is a Pomeranian Chihuahua. He's blonde. He is basically Satan. He is like the most adorable dog you've ever seen. You know, you walk up and he's like a foot, like front to back. And like, he just looks so cute. He's one of those toy dogs, but he is like Nibbles McGee and like, you know, barks at everything and runs around. And you're just like, shh, sleep, sleep. But yeah, between a color guard pup off, I mean, I would have to say probably Leo. Again, I've never met Bodie, but I feel like Leo is just, he has all the energy.
Wow. There should be a Dogs of Pageantry Instagram page where you get like Jennifer's BJ and then Bodie and then Artie and El Diablo, as it were.
You might want to edit that first one out.
Jennifer has a dog named BJ. But I realized it the minute I said it. We're going to keep it in because I think that's funny. Yes.
Sorry.
Let's get it back on track here. Jeffrey, for the folks listening to us at home, in their cars, in their bathtubs, in the subway, walking their dogs, at the gym, or guarding bathrooms during standardized tests, describe in excruciating detail what shoes you are wearing.
I am wearing an Alexander McQueen series.
I love Alexander McQueen.
Puma. This was a collection that he did. That I got for show hype for a Carl Jenkins show that I did with Cedar Ridge.
Yes.
It is giraffe print with a moss green suede and kind of that brown giraffe. I don't know where that would be on a giraffe, to be honest. To me, I was about to say brown armadillo. I don't even know what that material is. And then the bottom is 100% squeaky. Nice. But I think it's like rubber. I don't know.
It would be a rubber outsole. More.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks translucent-y.
Super comfortable. It just like squeaks like it's always wet.
Wow. Have you seen the Alexander McQueen movie? Surely you have, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's so good. So good.
It is... it's sad to watch.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's good because you're like... It's a riveting movie. But at the same time, you're just like, oh, like... All these geniuses who just have issues and then stuff happens. It sucks.
I mean, going back, I think that, you know, I wouldn't say that I was famous, but, you know, everyone, there's just always that behind the scenes. When you're put in that spotlight, there's just so much behind the scenes that people don't understand.
For sure. Yeah. Let's talk about process. Now, this is a conversation about process, but we can have fun, whatever. What tools, this is more of the nuts and bolts question. Like, what do you use when you're creating, whether it's an iPad or you literally use a pen and pencil or a drafting table, but what are you using when you're creating and designing?
That's a good question. I actually don't own an iPad. I don't have a lot of modern technology, though. There is this product called Remarkable that I was in a design meeting with Alan Spaeth and he used, and I am enamored by that. But I use everything. You know what I mean? Like, I use post-it notes to computers, you know? Where should I go with that question?
You're going along with it fine. I'm just curious, you know, if it was a music arranger, it's easy to go like, do you use Finale, Sibelius, do you use a piano, you know, but as a visual designer, like, are you using graph paper? Are you using, you have your rulers and 15 different markers? Like, I'm just curious for people who want to do what you do or want to know how you do it. It's just, this is a nuts and bolts. This isn't the whole ether mental emotional question yet. But
got it. Honestly, it really just depends on the show. You know, sometimes I'm working on a show and I'm not an artist by any means. If you've ever been a vendor that worked with me, you would understand that I send probably the crudest sketches. I'm like, make this. And it's like, you know, two lines and they're like, what? But yeah, I mean, a lot of the times I'll take like a flag template and I'll actually like, you know, I have limited technology. I don't know how to use Photoshop just yet or things like that. But I'll take a flag template specifically for flag design and I'll kind of click and save Shutterstock images or things like that. Mm-hmm. And I'll put it in, I'll try to tilt it. And then from there, you know, I'll either print it out and draw on it or I will like put like on, you know, numbers, pages.
Yeah.
I will like write, you know, but make this gradation look like this, have this stop here. You know, I do a lot of notes like that. Mm-hmm, I think specifically with that, I mean, in terms of like costuming, a lot of it is just my head. You know, I would try to sketch something out, but I don't think that it would look anything relatively close to what I envision.
So you're kind of, and I don't know what Steve Jobs did specifically, but the idea is Steve Jobs was the idea guy and then somebody made it work or so you don't specifically draw everything with every detail, every dimension, everything. You're the idea guy, you have this and you have a vision, somebody realizes that vision and they're like, no, like this. I mean, it's just a back and forth kind of editing process probably.
Absolutely. So I am one of those people, so that's a great way of putting it. Sorry, I didn't know if that was like the right way to answer the question.
No.
I am most definitely an idea person. Math is a foreign language to me. Okay. I actually learned what plywood was like 3 years ago. So, you know, I walked through with this band director that I had at the time and I was just like, what's that wood and what's this wood? You know, yeah. I'm always curious. But there's just a level of butchness that I don't understand. I think, you know, I am that person that will come in and say, you know, I need 10-foot tall tomatoes.
Oh.
And be like, I need 5 of these. Mm-hmm. I'll see you in a month. You know, and when I can, I will offer, you know, like if there's non-traditional materials or especially things that I've worked with and I've seen or you know, I have the pleasure of working with a lot of amazing prop builders.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I ask a lot of questions in terms of that, but I don't always, I'm just not someone that will fill in every blank for you, mm-hmm, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. So I think that is all part of the collaborative process between me and a school that I work with. You know, everyone has their own strengths and weaknesses. So, you know, sometimes I will do more and sometimes mm-hmm. I don't need to do all that. People are like, got it, you know?
Right.
So there's always an actualizer, I think. You know, there's that mathematician. I always say, for me specifically, behind every great designer is good technicians.
Ooh,
you know, so like
the good one.
Exactly. And I think that that's really why New Braunfels specifically did so well. I had an incredible technical staff,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so I can focus on what I need to do and I can facilitate making sure that my technical staff has the resources they need to be successful. But definitely I am that idea person. A lot of the times I know what I want because I know what I don't want, if that makes sense. So mm-hmm. usually I have to go through a first iteration of something. I very rarely am like, that's it, mm-hmm. you know? And sometimes, you know, I have a great working relationship with Creative Costuming and I love the people there. You know, they're just so creative. I mean, I used to work with Jason, I work with Marva and Erica and that, I mean, they're just so professional and I have such a rapport with them that at this point we're almost able just to bounce and like, they're like, I got it. I know what you want, you know? But very much I will get something and I'll say, okay, I love this, you know, but let's look at that, this, you know? And that's kind of how I get to my final product. It's very rarely the first version.
Right. So now the question that everyone wants to know about design, how do you design your shows? How do you gather your inspiration for a design? What things do you do to get you in the right mindset? Any sort of variation of that question, like, how do you design a show?
I light a scented candle and I pray to the Virgin de Guadalupe
very good.
For inspiration.
What's your favorite scent in a candle? Apple, I assume. Apple cinnamon, probably.
No, I feel like a lot of those candles, especially like Yankee candles, they can be, not Yankee, sorry, White Barn, like the Bed Bath & Beyond.
Oh, Bed Bath & Beyond.
Is that it? No, Bath & Body Works.
Bath & Body Works.
I feel like they can be a little too sweet to the nose. Mm-hmm. They can be overbearing. I think that I'm a classic girl. I enjoy eucalyptus and peppermint, you know? Ooh, I just think it's really soothing. Okay, so how do I design? So the first step that I do when I'm designing is it all deals with identity. So, you know, when let's say I get a call from a band director and they're like, you know, we've seen something you've done. We want you to come on. Can you describe your process to us? Mm-hmm. You know, the first thing that I do is I meet with them and I talk a lot about, like, before I even pitch a show, I want to find out about the program. Mm-hmm. You know, there are several people that I know that will, like, watch videos of the band in years past, yada, yada, yada. And I will do that as well. I want to do my research. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the times I want to know what thrills you. You know what I mean? Like, I want to know that when you walk off the field, how does, you know, band X want to be remembered, you know? And they're, it's surprising because I push a lot of people vocabulary-wise to articulate themselves a little clearer than I think that they might usually do. Like, you know, there's so many people that are like, well, I like dark shows, you know? Right. And they're like, you know, so I sit down, I have this meeting, I'm like, what type of show? And they're like, I like dark shows. I'm like, so what does that mean? You know what I mean? Like, what does dark mean to you? Yeah. You know, does dark mean we're doing like a spooky graveyard show? You know what I mean? Like, or is dark something completely? Is dark really the word intense? You know what I mean? So there's just a lot of times I really try to push whoever I'm talking to really describe what they enjoy. You know, there are bands that are visual bands. You know what I mean? Like musically, they know that they're not the strongest, but visually, they can really take that to the next level. There are bands that are classical bands. They really enjoy, you know, band literature. And there are bands that are much more contemporary. You know, they're going to do not necessarily pop songs, but, you know, those are the bands that kind of follow in the wake of the Bluecoats right now. And what they're doing identity-wise is, you know, playing those Thank You Scientists and things like that. So a lot of it is I can go in and I can say, this is your show, but like, you know, that's putting my style on someone. You know, I wouldn't ask you to dress me if you don't know me at all, you know? So, that's where the conversation starts. You know, from there, we talk about strengths and weaknesses in the program, in the in-house staff. And I try to get a good understanding of what they're looking for. I make essentially what I call a checklist. Okay. From there, I go back and I work to either, you know, every year I kind of have a catalog of shows that I'm thinking about during the season. And I'm like, you know, these are shows that I really want to do next year, you know, and they might fit on different people. So I kind of go through, and at first I'll go through that because those are the shows that I'm most passionate about, you know? Mm-hmm. And then from there, if I'm like, okay, none of these shows necessarily fit this description, I will start to look for inspiration. You know what I mean? A lot of that is I am such a nerd of this activity. You know, a lot of people that know me know that, like, they call me like an encyclopedia at time. You know, like, there's just so many things that I'll be like, oh yeah, and in 2004, Carmel did this. And, you know, I always reference, I tell everyone that my favorite dream show is The Muppet Show. And like, very few people remember, but Carmel High School did that in the winter in 2006.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, Rosie's second year. So they did The Simpsons and then they did The Muppets. So, you know, I do a lot of a pull from history because I think that, you know, there's this whole thing that, you know, when I was coming into my own, as I still am, that people were all about, you know, what's new, what's new, what's new. It's all about that. Mm-hmm. But I think that, like, and this is something that, you know, my words to designers, you know, especially people coming into the design field is, there's this line in Sunday in the Park with George that says, you know, let it come from you, then it will be new. You know, and I just think that, you know, and I might have misquoted. I apologize to all the musical theater.
We're getting emails as we speak.
But you know what I mean? I think that, like, what makes something new and fresh is your own take on it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I haven't ran into, I listened to your podcast before. And you talked about, you know, how do you make things interesting the 10th time you've done it? I'm really fortunate that I haven't necessarily, I'm not there just yet, you know? I do try to find things that might be variations of themes, but this is a tangent. So
fine. That's
getting back on track.
No, continue, please.
So we have this initial meeting I sit down and I work to make sure that the show that I pick, I feel checks all the boxes, if not the majority of the boxes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. From there, I will meet again with the in-house staff and I'll provide a concept paper. So this is basically going to be a skeleton of the show. It's not, nothing is ever locked into place. I think, you know, there, it's really interesting. I just attended WGICon and I attended this incredible workshop by Siobhan, who is the director of Imbue. And she talked about, in her process, that the title is always the last thing to come. And that's something else that I've had that conversation with many other people where they're like, the title's usually the last thing. The title for me is usually the first thing.
I feel
like when I sit down, and it'll change, but I want to have that working title because I feel like that will help me because the word is edit. You know, the thing that designers, especially younger designers, including myself, you know, the lesson to learn is that editing process. And I feel like the title gives me a lens to filter through. So I will, you know, I'd have the title, I'd have the movements. If I name the movements, I feel like that's a little retro, you know, Movement 2, The Awakening.
Yes. It's a good
one. Right. It'll have like color guard costumes in it. It'll have breaking down the movements and like effect ideas in there. I might, it'll have the sketch, a crude sketch of the field setup. So basically, it should be able to paint a broad stroke picture of what the show will be so that there's not, you know, it's not going to fill in every blank because I think sometimes you have to let the work guide you, if that makes sense. You know, there are programs that, you know, they want A to Z to be spelled out. I just think that sometimes, not always, but sometimes in my process, I might not necessarily know where the ending is just yet, you know? And so I might have two of the three movements done. And I kind of want to see that set and that will kind of steer me in the direction that I want. And I think that that really, you know, a good example of this is last year I did an adaptation of The Yellow Wallpaper with Jaxie Hayes High School.
Oh, okay.
The last time they went to area, they were 17th, you know, and this time they were 7th. They were first alternate to state. And part of that was, again, sculpting the identity into that band lit that I talked about earlier because that's what they enjoyed. But part of it was I didn't know how I wanted the show to end because in the story, the wife goes insane and she like is behind the wallpaper, you know? And so I knew that I wanted to bring that element of franticness and frenzy. But I just wasn't sure because I had this bed prop in the front and I had all the props in the back. And so kind of looking at it, I was like, oh, I know what to do. But that took kind of melding the program a certain level to go, this is where these drops need to be able to get this effect that I want so that this is the emotional response at the end of the show, if that makes sense.
It does.
So from there, I coordinate with the music arranger. So I'll sit down. I talk a lot about pacing. So everyone has their way of doing things and everyone likes different lengths of songs. I work within my wheelhouse with that. So I'll do that. Once music is produced, I break that down into a count sheet. And I do set up a Google Drive. Google Drive is better than Dropbox. Fight me.
That's a discussion going on. It seems like every few weeks someone goes, which one's better than the other one? I prefer Google Drive.
I mean, Google Drive has 15 gigabytes. Seriously. Dropbox has 2, and then they make you pay.
That is correct.
You know, and like, yeah. I'm frugal over the most random things. You know what I mean? Like, I'll splurge.
Right.
I'm like, $1.99. What is this? Highway robbery?
For sure.
Like my father.
Extra avocado. What are you talking about?
What are all these young people doing with their money?
Damn millennials.
But I'll create a Google Drive and it'll have all the folders because I do think with designing, transparency is really important.
Sure.
So I think that part of that, again, and this will go a little bit later, but transparency for the reason of accountability. So there's so many steps and people involved in the process of designing that there's so much room for miscommunication and error, you know? So that's why so many times from page to stage, there's just translation issues. So I try to be as transparent as possible. So I create this drive. I break the music down into counts. And these are like essentially how I see this set wise. And it'll have the rehearsal letters, it'll have the counts, it'll have like the lead instrument voicing, and then it'll have columns for visual and guard and brass and percussion. Very similar to a lot of people's process at that point. From there, we send that to the drill writer. I also have a conversation with them. I talk through the show as well because sometimes It's easier for me to discuss something than it is for them to read it. Because again, there's just that level of then translation from text. And that's kind of the process to bring the drill to life. From there, during the season, my fee specific, like for me, covers consultation throughout the entire season. So I think, you know, there are definitely bands that I hand them a show and they're like, thanks, you know, and I don't hear from them again until November. And they're like, I'm ready. And there are bands that, you know, need that, you know, for show or every 2 weeks, they'll send me a video and I'll give them notes. Because sometimes they just need to kind of see it through my eyes. So for me, I don't even just type the notes. Now it might be a little crude, but I take my iPhone 11.
Oh, humble brag.
And I record the recording and I point at my computer and I'll say, look at this, look at this, look at this. Because sometimes, you know, I can write that. But again, that's a translation thing.
Yeah,
so the truest thing is if you see my finger pointing at trumpets, that's what I'm talking about.
Wow.
And that's, I mean, that's kind of my process. You know, there are things in that, you know, I'll show up and I'll be like, there's still a pacing issue here. We need to look at this, or we need to produce this, or things like that. But I try to make sure that I, from the beginning, when we sit down and talk about identity to the end of the season, that I am involved in some way, shape or form at the discretion of the director.
Yeah. Wow. That is the most detailed and awesome anyone's gone into process here, which is great. I love it.
Oh, is that too much?
No, I think I think everyone's going to get a different thing who listens to this. Some people want that. Some people are like, no, I want to hear more about the dog. You know, all these things, it's great. It gives people different things to latch onto. What I want to ask you now is we worked on a project, United High School, flight 357?
571, but I wanted to call it 956. I didn't know if that would be like wrong. I just feel like 571 was the actual flight number.
It was. What's funny is when I told someone, one of my friends, one of the nerds, by the way, the Texas band nerds, he goes, oh my God, this is about the plane that crashed and they ate everybody. Are you going to have everyone? And I was like, I don't think so. But my question is this, and they went to their first BOA, they made finals, probably didn't do as well as they wanted or had hoped. And then like Sunday or Monday, I get an email, all these edits, right? Like we'd like to change this, change this, change this. Can you talk about what happens when you've got a show, you've put it out there, the judges say, this didn't work as well, have you considered this? And how that goes into your process of changing, altering, and then how many people have to go, you're changing an ocean liner, but you got to change it much quicker. Let's speak specifically about that United. So since we both work on that project.
Absolutely. We actually work on several projects.
We do, but everyone else has been perfect up until now.
So. Well, I will say this. In terms of judges' commentary, I think that the biggest thing for me is that I look for patterns. You know, I think that a lot of people, the number one mistake that they make is that, you know, they get a critique on a first read and then suddenly they're like, you know, abandon ship.
They overread,
Exactly. So I think that the first thing that you need to look for are patterns. You know what I mean? If more than one person is talking about it, and that's not to say that if a lone wolf, you know, is up there and they say something, that it's not credible. I mean, everything is credible. I just think that I take that, and one, I always apply it to the next year. You know, I want to hear what judges are saying, because I'm constantly trying to prove my process, you know.
Yeah, of course.
But in terms of like within the season, let's say, I mean, the goal is, I think, you know, Manny Maldonado said this to me a few years ago, you know, what you are paying for is my best first guess. You know, and I think that that is a good way of putting it. You know what I mean? Like, I can see this in my head, but again, how it translates might be different.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully, as it has many times, it translates right and it does very well.
Yes.
But in the instance that there's like a section that needs to change, you know, I just think that that's a conversation. Part of it is, again, isolating. The word for me would be totality. You know what I mean? I think that that's something, again, that as a designer, I feel like I would equate it to looking into a score. Sometimes people fix a part and they don't realize how it changes the ensemble, you know, and I've actually been forced to try to speak a little bit more, band director, you know what I mean? Than visual director, if that makes sense.
Right.
So I do try to equate things to music. I think that a lot of the times, that is it. Is so it's really isolating which part and making sure that that works as a whole. So,
correct.
So specifically, you know, for United at BOA, I think that for me, when I watch the show, because that's the first time I was actually able to view it in person, and that's a whole other thing. Viewing it in video and viewing in person is a very different experience. For me, it's just, you know, for anyone that kind of knows about the flight, you know, the idea. So I initially pitched a completely different show, and they came at me and they're like, you know, this is something that we're, and this is also something that I guess I should have mentioned earlier. Again, a tangent.
It's fine.
But sometimes I work with people that have show ideas, mm-hmm. and I think that that's also important because, you know, sometimes people will ask me, do we give the idea? Do you give the idea? And I think part of that, again, is I do my best work as I feel many people do when they're passionate about something.
Correct.
So if you present an idea that I'm like, I can get behind that, mm-hmm. then I'll ride with it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Cause it doesn't need to be my way or the highway.
Right.
In terms of them, it's basically the way in which we programmed the show was almost like an adaptation of when Boston did SOS, like the Castaway, mm-hmm. except this is the plane crash into a different environment.
Yes.
So the intro is all about going down. You know what I mean? So we do this like a Lord of the Rings, Mines of Moria piece. Mm-hmm. You get them coming from the wreckage of the airplane prop they have. And you have this like this tension and all the counter motion of the band, and they're spiraling, and the guard has like the silhouette of the flag with the warning lights. Mm. And so for me, when I was looking, the first thing I'm trying to do when you have a linear story show is making sure that as an onlooker, you know what the story is mm-hmm. without having to read a paper. And I think, again, you know, as an adjudicator, a lot of the times I watch shows and I just comment to myself that there's obviously a story happening. You know, there's obviously a discussion that happened with the in-house staff. It's just not being translated to me. You know what I mean? So how can you go about editing that in a way to make that idea clearer.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm watching, I just found that I wasn't able to follow the story as well as I had hoped. And in a show that the effectiveness of the show is based on being able to do that through line of the story, there were just elements that needed to be fixed.
Right.
So, I mean, that's basically it, you know, it's going back to that initial sheet, looking at the critiques that you've been given and trying to make sure that you balance whatever your creative intent is with what they're telling you needs to be changed to be competitively successful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there is a big distinction between that. And again, for anyone that designs, you know, I design because I enjoy creating.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
mm-hmm.
design to win. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you walk into a room and you're like, I want a winning show, I'm like, well, maybe that's going to be someone else for you. You know what I mean? And like, that's not to say I do, you know, Scott Chandler said this, and this is something I repeat all the time, you know, it's not all about winning and losing, but I didn't come here to lose.
Yeah.
You know, I think that that's a great quote. I actually think that's in his book, Ford March. Buy it on Amazon.
Right. Amazon.com.
But, you know, I did read that. But, you know, that's it. I mean, I do design for it to be competitive, but I also design for it to be inspirational. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And sometimes those two things are not necessarily mutually exclusive, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, that's basically it. It's just, you know, taking that feedback and saying, you know, these are the things we need to look at musically. These are the things we need to look at visually.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's prioritizing. So a lot of the times, you know, something else is when I give notes, I always tell anyone I work with, you have to prioritize based on your schedule and what you know your kids are capable of. Because I could sit here and be like, this, you know, all this stuff. And you might go, we have 3 rehearsals left.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I think that a big thing is like, I also try to make sure, you know, especially, you know, in that instance, like I went to critique the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to sit with the judges as I do for clients as well. You know, I'll go in and talk because the big thing is just discussing the intent
mm-hmm.
and how to make the intent clearer.
Correct.
So, you know, everything else performance wise, that's going to be on the in-house staff, for I believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I have an ADD moment right now.
It's fine.
We'll
insert a commercial here or something.
So then we will go and I'll point out and say, these are the 3 things you need to look at. I've been very fortunate that it hasn't, in the last few years that I've been designing, there hasn't been an entire chunk of a show that they're like, all this is wrong.
Right.
So it's usually an element of that and making sure again, and usually for the most part, it's actually, I find that it's thinning that mm-hmm. needs to happen. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the time people, especially in Texas, I found, you know, I think people do too much mm-hmm. and they watch these programs that are so successful and, you know, you clock them and you're like, oh man, they only play as a band, you know, 50% of the show and they're only playing 2D band mm-hmm. 20%.
Yeah.
And you know, there's too much notes and too much drill. And that's just, you know, and don't get me wrong, I love that. I love drill for drill. You know, that is the cadets. Yeah. You know, work hard for hard's sake. But you know what I mean? And I credit that, because then when I see it and it's executed well, you're just like, wow, you know? But when I'm looking around, I think that a lot of the times it's just looking at elements and actually taking things out. Because again, usually the reason that things are not clear is because there's too many things happening, not because there's not enough things happening.
Wow. Another great answer. Yes, you should take a drink. You earned it. You deserve it. Jeffrey, how do you start your day?
Well, I used to start my day with coffee. It was something that that was part of my creative process, like my creative habit, I guess, to quote a Twilight Tharp book. But I gave up coffee in December.
Did you?
Yeah, this is tea. This is jasmine tea.
Is it hot tea?
Hot tea.
Because that's what you are?
Hot tea.
A hottie.
Or jasmine.
A hottie. Get it? Anybody? 10 cents to Arrested Development. Okay.
I've never seen that show.
What? Oh, so now it's just jasmine tea, eucalyptus, chamomile, mint?
It's usually green.
Green.
Sometimes I'll go black, but I but yes, it's usually green tea. How do I start my day? Honestly, I pick up my phone and I answer emails. I do feel like I usually start my day with a barrage of emails, so it's going through and making sure that everyone has the information that they need. So usually during the what I'd call off season, I would usually get up and go to a coffee shop and then just start working on emails. You know, that's communicating. You know, part of my process is I actually have, like I said earlier with creative, I have a great relationship with a lot of different vendors, and that's something that band directors that hire me, they don't have to worry about, like, oh, I need to communicate with this and this and this and this. I take care of all of that. So I do all the legwork, and then I pass on the quote, you know, and so everything financial would obviously come from the in-house. But I always say that that's, you know, another appeal is because, you know, band directors, they already have, especially Texas band directors, already have so much on their plate to deal with that, like, I do all of the back and forth and I keep written documentation of that. So I'm very meticulous with that. So a lot of my days are, you know, I direct Origins. So right now we're setting up for an apparel fundraiser. So I'm creating a store for that. I do website design. So I'm always fixing, like, my website or Origins website. You know, I'm planning for, again, for the winter season that's happening right now. So it's usually that I start my day. I start my day with work, a healthy dose of work.
That's how it goes. That's how it goes. Your website, sperlingdesigns.com. Why is there no space between Sperling and Designs? Not necessarily the web address, but when you talk about Sperling Designs, it's Sperling Designs.
So that's a great question. So when I first started, I was actually S Squared Innovations. And it was me and my friend Frankie Salati. And he was my costume illustrator. So Salati and Sperling, S Squared. Got it.
I get you.
And then when I started my own business, after I left directing full time, I just came up with the name Sperling Designs. I mean, to be honest, because my business has grown in the way it has, I'm actually looking to change the name because, you know, I outsource and contract in choreographers and music arrangers and drill writers because, again, I think the biggest appeal is that when you come to me, I can assemble that team for you. You know what I mean? Like, and if you want to work with these people, I'm very fortunate and blessed to be able to work with so many different people like yourself.
Yes, you are. Thank you.
But I want to make sure that I can provide, you know, if you're like, this is what I need, I'm like, I got you, you know? So, I do want to, I feel like Sperling Designs is a bit, you know, to me, and I do work with a lot of different people. So it's just, it's really hard, especially since we're like so close sometimes to the dance world, because I was like, what if I did like Center Stage Productions? And I was like, that's like probably that. Taken. You
it
know?
Probably is. You know, there's a good movie called Center Stage. I'm not sure if you ever saw it.
I have seen that
movie.
I
love that movie.
But you know what I mean? Like, there's only so many business names you can choose. I mean, like, I feel like everything with innovations has already been chosen.
We got to spell it differently. Like, I-N-O-V-8 or something.
There you go. But yeah, I mean, that's really, there's not a long story. It's just, you know, my last name is Sperling and I design.
Wow. There it is. There it is. Yes, you have lots of designers on your website. Not me. Hey, what inspires you?
I think that's a great question. What inspires me? To be honestly, I think that the biggest thing that inspires me is just, you know, would saying the human condition be like too esoteric? I think that I think a lot of the times what inspires me is nostalgia, or almost this like romanticism of nostalgia. Mm-hmm. You know, like I look back on a lot of things and I'm like, that might not be historically accurate, but we're going to do a show about that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And so I think that a lot of the things, you know, I draw inspiration from so many things. I feel like the worst part about being creative is that my mind is just always going. And unfortunately, at like the worst time.
Of course it is.
Like when you're trying to sleep.
Yeah.
But like everything, you know, I'll watch a dance show, I'll watch a movie. I there's an entire period of my year that all I do is just absorb as much content as possible. I'm on Netflix. I'm a huge cinephile, which for those of you out there means that I like movies.
He likes the movies, like Michael Bolton. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I watch everything. Right now I'm doing a Studio Ghibli kick where I'm watching everything Studio Ghibli.
Yeah, that just got announced. HBO Max is picking up, I think, all of those movies. It's Ghibli, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, HBO Max is picking
like
up all those
away
movies.
And all that. Uh-huh. But you know what I mean? Like, I watch everything. I watch the news. I listen to what's going on politically. I you know, watch shows. And again, I think that that's something for me that I think is very specific. You know, there's so many art forms that archive their history. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you know, losing the fan network as we did for Winter Guard and not being able to produce those things because of copyright restrictions, you know, we've just lost, you know, so many kids I talk to about shows. And like, you know, right now I'm doing a show and I'm referencing a visual element that I saw in 2004. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And like, it's, you know, it's one of those, you know, everything old is new again type of deals. Yeah. But,
90s
you know,
fashion.
Yeah, right. Chokers are in. Scrunchies right now.
That's right.
Find Origin scrunchies on our store.
What's the website for that?
www.originscolorguard.org.
Origins, not oranges. Origins.
Origins.
But the origins, plural. They're the origins oranges, right?
Yes. Well, that's a joke because, you know, we used to say origins and everyone thought we were saying oranges.
Gotcha.
So it just kind of became a thing.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. Scrunchies. Yeah. So what's old is new again.
Yeah. So I just think that, you know, everything inspires me. Nature inspires me a lot. You know, I go hiking. I look at different things. I mean, because anything can be a show.
For sure.
You know, so it's just looking at all the possibilities. But I think that daily experiences, content, and nostalgia, a lot of nostalgia, you know what I mean? There's so many things that I'm like, oh, I saw this show in 1986 and this would be so good right now. You know what I mean? Because sometimes it's just, again, it's not always about reinventing the wheel. It's about doing it with your perspective.
Correct.
And I think that that is something that it took me so long to learn, you know, as a designer, because it's like, you know, how many times have I seen an Arabian show? But you know what? I love that music. So like sometimes it's like, well, how can we do this and just not use Scheherazade?
Right.
You know, how can we update this? How can I look at like video games or different things or, you know, different colors and kind of revamp it with my own flair? So I just think I take inspiration from waking up in the morning and just existing.
You open up and you see your dog staring at you, feed me. Right. Yeah. Oh,
right.
Oh, yes. You did mention an Arabian show, but not using Scheherazade. I'm sorry that we did use Scheherazade in a new and clever, exciting way with Hanks High School this year.
Yes, you did. It's actually a fantastic arrangement.
It's actually, he says it like it's not, like, you actually did a good job. Good for you, Daniel.
Was that the inflection of my voice?
Well, I don't think so. You know,
it's a great arrangement.
It is. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. So was the Pocket Full of Posies the year before. Because it was Lincolnshire Posey.
Yeah,
I didn't want to do Lincolnshire the way everybody did.
The aesthetics turned out really great for both
they
of those
did.
Shows. Yeah,
yeah,
very happy with that.
Good for both of us.
Yeah.
Yes. You
great
know what?
Job,
yeah.
us.
That's right. Jeffrey, what's one thing you really want to master?
Oh, that's such an open-ended question.
It is. Keep it clean.
The universe? I'm just kidding. what do I want to master? Well, I don't necessarily know if the word master is in my goal for anything. I'm just always trying to get better at what I do. You know what I mean? I always want to be the truest, most authentic version of myself as a human being, you know? And I think that that's a whole other tangent, which is, you know, there's a lot of great designers. You know, I think that it's so much more important to be such a good person, you know, in the long run. So I think that part of it is just always working on yourself, you know. For me, I think that right now, if I had to like say something I'm mastering, I think it's the word balance, you know, in life. You know, I practice yoga right now I'm on a brief pause, but sure. You know, there's just finding a lot of the times we take so much time and we focus on so many things that we don't think about ourselves holistically, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's like, I want to be able to create great art, you know, but I also want to make sure that I don't sacrifice everything else I want in life, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So I think trying to just find that balance of being able to make sure that I am receptive and communicative to my clients, you know, and that I'm always advocating for them, but I'm also finding that time for me to work on myself, and to, you know, find peace, you know, mm-hmm. find what serves me and what does not. And again, you know, there are so many things through yoga that I've found out about me, you know, just my tendencies as a human being that I'm trying to work on, mm-hmm. you know? I think that, I guess, I don't know if that answered your question, but I would say that that's the biggest thing. I mean, other than that, you know, I would presume that hopefully everyone is trying to master their craft, you know, and really being able to bring themselves in their truest form to the activity, mm-hmm. you know? Because again, going back, I just think, you know, Carl Lowe talks about it. You know, we're in this identity crisis as an activity where so many bands and winter guards look the same. Mm-hmm. And I just think that, you know, what's competitive and what inspires you or other people might not be the same thing. You know, I think that it's having that conversation about, is eighth place bad? You know what I mean? Like, I think that a few years ago, like, not to put them under, but like Flow Marching, like, wrote this article about Onyx, and it was like a disappointing 10th place finish, you know? And I'm just like, I would kill to be 10th place at World Class. Right? Are you
yeah,
kidding
exactly.
me?
Exactly.
You know? So I just think that, you know, it's always, that's a whole other thing when it comes to like mastering your craft. But I just think that, you know, competition and mastering are not mutually exclusive. You know what
Correct.
I mean?
Correct. No. Yeah. What is your favorite cuisine to cook?
Oh, chicken? I don't know. anything chicken? My favorite cuisine to eat is Asian. Oh, I could have rice at every meal. I loved it. In fact, at one point in time, someone told me that the Mandarins ate rice at every meal, and I was like, I'm trading over. to cook, honestly, I don't cook that much anymore. I have an arrangement,
if you will,
with my best friend okay. and roommate, Chelsea Robinson.
All right.
Yeah. And she cooks and I clean.
Oh.
She is a phenomenal cook. Truthfully, I have this plan to buy her a food truck and to do Chelsea's comfort food.
Oh,
delicatessen.
What's her specialties?
Is it just home cooking?
Like Southern. Like if we're talking, she's from Georgia or something, then I'm like,
She's from Arlington, Texas.
Okay, but
you know, she can make fried chicken and mashed potatoes and broccoli like you've never had it, you know? She buys this like dollar bread from HEB, you know? Really good stuff. She cuts it up. She butters it. She broils it. She puts garlic powder on it. She makes like her own garlic bread. Yeah. It's so good and so cheap.
Yeah.
But she is just a phenomenal human being and such a good cook. So yeah, I don't cook very often. I bake. I just actually baked an apple crisp
yes,
the other day.
You did bake an apple crisp. Yeah. You didn't bring any.
Oh.
Chelsea, come on the show and cook. Jeffrey, you ready for this one? What's been the most rewarding project thus far in your career?
Oh, all of my projects. I'm just kidding.
That's the right answer.
No, I mean, definitely, I just always try to square myself. I am so blessed to be able to do what I do. You know, there are so many people that live a life not able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I always try to make sure that I step back and I realize just how grateful, you know, I feel like perhaps people like read my Facebook and they're like, he's always so grateful and blessed. But you know what I mean? But like, the fact is like, I just try to acknowledge, I mean, my best project is all of them because literally I come in, you know, I was just at United the other day and I just said, you know, it's a blessing to wake up mm-hmm. and be able to teach you. You know, I might've been so frustrated. I might be popping Tylenol after that because of that headache. You know what I mean? Like not them specifically,
right,
but like,
right, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it might not have gone the right way, but like the fact is like it is a blessing to be able to do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the most rewarding project, truthfully, is Origins. It's something that I hope we can talk a little bit more about. But
you can go for it right now. It's fine.
You know, a few years ago I met one of my mentors, Joe Catania, and he instilled in me that creating only matters when you create with the people you care about. And you know, when I, you know, I had been working at Spirit Independent, and my best friend, Christopher McCarthy, McNeil High School, shout out.
In Austin, Texas.
Yes,
but Round Rock ISD, just to clarify that.
Yes, sir. And so, you know, he was teaching ATX at the time, and we just kept talking about our experiences, you know, like when I marched Zydeco and how that impacted me, and when he marched Spectrum and how we wanted to bring something like that to Central Texas. Mm-hmm. And so being able to come out with Origins, I mean, competition aside, I mean, they've been very successful, mm-hmm. but I mean, the most beautiful thing about that project is that truthfully, it gives me an opportunity to see so many people that I just really enjoy seeing
right.
on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. I'm like, good, you're trapped, you know. But you know, it's just, it's so cool creating, and we don't always see eye to eye, you know. We have very different design aesthetics at mm-hmm. times, mm-hmm. but the fact is that I get to leave Origins and understand that, like, I do feel in my heart of hearts that we provide the kids such a great educational experience. We do so many things that aren't even on the floor, like we do WGI history nights, and we try to like really give them a greater sense of love for this activity, mm-hmm. you know, and passion for it. And you know, the first thing we do is we don't even rehearse. We do a scavenger hunt around town, and it's just like, you know, it's so much about team dynamics, you know, and group bonding, because I think that for them to be able to walk on the floor, they need to be able to look to the person to the right and the left of them and understand that they're there for them mm-hmm. as much as, you know, you are for everyone else. I don't think I worded that right, but you know what I mean?
I get you.
It's just, it creates just an entirely different feel on the floor than just the fact that we're spinning, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that my favorite project I get to work on is the fact that I get to create with my best friends.
Right. So let's talk about Origins a little more. So you mentioned ATX. There was another group. Is it Identity? Was in Austin. You know, it's the idea, like, why is someone starting a drum corps? So like, why another WGI group in the Austin area? And you mentioned some things that you wanted to bring to it, but you know, it takes a lot of like, we're going to do this. You're starting a big group. Like, why?
So I think that's a great question. Thanks, Glenn. No, just kidding. Thanks, Rick, for the question.
Glenn Coco?
All right. No, Glenn from like SNL. Have you ever seen Melissa McCarthy? When Glenn from the New York Times. Sit down, Glenn. Who here hates Glenn? 1, 2, 3, infinity. That's the real story. That. It's her Sean Spicer impression.
That's what it is. Thank you. Okay. I was like, I was picturing it now.
So one, I will say this. Before doing Origins, I had a million opinions about color guards and, you know, why they're not good, or, you know, this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
After doing it, I wonder why anyone would ever want to direct an independent guard. No, I mean, truly, it's the members mm-hmm. that I love. But why bring them out? I think that it's hard to answer that question. We felt like the particular brand of color guard that we both were inspired by, you know, that we grew up with, did not exist in Austin. Okay. So that's really it. You know, we wanted to have some place that was about teaching kids to love color guard. You know what I mean? For them to have that place. And that was, you know, looking back on it, you know, I was a very different at 18 than I am now, which is 19. So
yes, I was going to say, it's only been a year. I don't know.
But, you know, there was just so many things about it that, you know, working in Central Texas, I just didn't feel existed. So I think that, you know, it needed to come from that place, like I said, where it's so much more about just giving them a love for the activity. And so I think that first and foremost. And I think the second thing, again, is that everyone has a different voice. You know what I mean? Like, there's not necessarily a good or bad. There's just a difference of aesthetics, you know? And so I thought that Chris and I, you know, this was our opportunity, you know, to do something. I don't know where I'll be 5 years down the road or where he'll be, you know, like both of our parents are aging and mm-hmm. we both come from different parts of the country. So we wanted, I mean, it seemed like all the stars were aligning, sure. You know, Identity, unfortunately, after their long and very successful run, they folded, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, the ATX directors moved to Delaware. Mm-hmm. So there was just, you know, these vacancies that were opening up mm-hmm. and it was almost like, you know, look to the universe and it'll give you a sign. Mm-hmm. And so it just felt right. So we did it, you know, and we had our first edition and we had our first season and we finished fifth in Independent Open, mm-hmm. Which I don't know the history on that, but I will say that I think that it's rare to do that well. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that came from the fact that, like, we just really care about the kids, you know, we care so much more about so many things that maybe people undervalue because they're so busy on the e-enda, you know, mm-hmm. to realize that people are people, mm-hmm. you know. I think that one of the things, you know, Chris just won Director of the Year in TCGC last mm-hmm. year. And you know, everything that they said about him was completely true. I think that he is such a phenomenal instructor. He gives kids and performers such a safe space, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that people don't think about that. You're so busy beating the kids and thinking about, like, you know, like, oh, we need to beat so-and-so. We have to hit the score. And I just think that, you know, like, kids are having hard weeks. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I feel like kids more and more, like, sometimes they just need someone to talk to, you for know? Sure. And I think that that, again, is something that at Origins, you know, we say you clap for everyone, mm-hmm. you know, you support everyone. And when you need help, like, know that this is a safe space for that. So I just think it's a beautiful dynamic.
Yeah, yeah. Why the title Origins? Why the name Origins?
So I wish that there was actually a good story for that. So I actually, when we sat down and we were planning the guard, I actually wanted to call the guard Spectrum. That was like my ode to Chris. I mean, Spectrum was a winter guard that was extremely successful under the direction of Beth and her husband, who I feel like his name's Chris Calhoun.
Okay. I'll trust you on
Beth
that.
Calhoun. And I just felt like there was something about that, you know what I mean? Like, that I thought would have been really cool for Chris. Mm-hmm. I don't know specifically now looking back why that was, but, you know, we had played around with, like, refractions or, you know, prism of light and, like, mm-hmm. all that stuff. I mean, honestly, what it ended up being is Chris had a friend, unfortunately, who passed away a few years ago, Rob Strain. Okay. And They had talked about if they had ever opened up a winter guard that they wanted to call it Origins. So that was something that, again, for me, the title, it's important because that's like the branding. But I just, at that moment, I felt like it was more important to, and still do, that, you know, the title should be something that we both enjoy. And that's something that Chris threw out and I really liked. And, you know, more so than the name is we wanted to brand it with this kind of Southwest Austin-y feel. And so that's actually where, like, the Dreamcatcher came from, you know, because, like, Origins and dreaming have nothing distinctly to do with each other. Sure. You know, like, the Origins idea, you know, that I tell people is, like, you know, it's getting back to the origin of, like, why you do it, you know, your passion, which sounds great. Again, not a great story for the name, but the bigger thing is that, you know, the Dreamcatcher came with it and the whole idea of, like, where dreams begin and everything. And that's something that, like, Chris threw out. And I was like, that's so awesome. Not only that, but I'm like, people love to buy apparel with dream catchers.
They sure do.
So
cha-ching.
So, you know what I mean? I was like, you know, because that's something that I don't think that enough people do think about. And that's branding. That's a whole other thing that I don't necessarily, I mean, yes, it does play into the fact that I design, but, like, even when I was a public school teacher, you know, and I would do color guard, I thought that it was so important, apparel. That's what people don't think about. I mean, in Texas, when you have this hierarchy, the social hierarchy where drill team is everything, then you need to make sure that the color guard looks either as a viable alternative or as the first option. Correct. And the way you do that is the way that they look. You know, you can't dress your kids like frumpy little, I don't know.
Whatever. Yeah.
Goombas.
Urchins.
You know?
Drag
rats.
So,
like, it's just about, like, how appealing can you make it? So I think that that's cool. I mean, we have an incredible graphic design team. But our logo, I mean, it was designed by Jeanette Pritchard, who is an artist at DPG right now. And she does her own thing on the side, I believe, perhaps. I'm not sure if she still does it, but just incredible. And it just kind of all came to life from there. But it's just, we wanted to make sure, and a lot of our apparel, like this time around, we're doing like a I Love Origins So Much shirt, like based on the wall. And we do a tie-dye shirt that said Keep Origins Weird.
Yeah.
So it's just all about making sure that we connect with our roots, which is Austin.
Correct. I love that. I'm an Austin native, by the way. I don't know if you know that. Jeffrey, what can't you live without?
So many things.
Oxygen. I guess that's an unsuitable answer.
Oxygen, for starters.
Boy, no one's ever said that one.
Right?
Surely nobody has.
What can I live without? I don't know. I feel like there's probably a lot of things that I probably can live without. You know, I think definitely living overseas, I learned a lot about the materialistic approach of Western society. You know, like in Tel Aviv, I like was in a twin size bed. You know, it's very, very bare bones.
Yeah, sure.
So, and that's not everything. I should say Tel Aviv is a gorgeous city, and there is luxury to it, but where I was specifically was a twin size bed. So I mean there are a lot of things that I can live without. I mean, I know that this probably sounds repetitive because I know that this has been answered before, but I music. Mm-hmm. Probably. I think for me, music is always an escape, you know, even when I'm not designing. I think that sometimes music is able to communicate how I feel, you know, in a way that I might not be able to articulate myself, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Which is like a whole other thing about emotions and, you know, understanding them. And that's, again, that kind of goes with the whole mastering idea. But yeah, I would say music. I think it's really a gateway for me to express myself, whether it's just me listening to it, you know, or me playing it for other people.
Speaking of music, what's the last piece of music you've listened to?
I was listening to NPR this morning, so that wasn't music.
Like a jazzy little...
what was the last piece of music I was listening to? Well, right now I'm like in WinterGuard design mode, so I've been like listening to a bunch of different things, you know? I've been listening to a lot of Bobby McFerrin lately, to be honest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I do like all the zibu baba doo boo bee, all that.
Sounds like you should just record it yourself.
Yeah, there you go, my new scat album. There you go. My EP is coming out.
There it is. Scatting with Sperling.
What's the last song, though? Oh, I wouldn't. I don't even know.
Well, great. Thanks for nothing.
I do like a Discover Weekly, like on my Spotify. Uh-huh. So like it's like I it's a song that I don't know the title to. I've been like going through.
Sure. That makes sense. Makes sense. When did you realize that you were good or knew what you were doing?
Am I good? No, I actually think that that is a really good topic to discuss. I think that literally so many people, including myself, you know, they feel this sense of imposter syndrome, you know. I think that when did I realize? I mean, I feel like I have always kind of had a knack for designing. I don't know if it was always fully realized. I don't know if it's still fully realized. But I definitely think, again, it's something that, see, all this connects like full circle, but it's something that like going, being introspective and looking at yourself, you realize within this activity, there are a lot of people's opinions, you know? And so as a designer, you know, being like putting your art out there is a very vulnerable place to be, you know? And so I think that, again, being on the flip side, you know, of even like I spoke about earlier of origins, you know, there's so many things that people think, you know, I look at designers and I'm like, well, that's the same old thing. You know what I mean? But like, sure. The thing is like, again, going back to it is like, it took me a long time to realize that like it has to come from you. You know, and I think that that is what makes it authentic. So, I mean, am I good? I don't know. I mean, we'll let, you know, the audience decide. I think, you know, we'll let adjudicators decide that. But I think for me, it's not about, I think the context of good or bad is not the right way to frame it. I think that, do I love what I do? And do I feel like it inspires other people to love it? And I would say yes, you know, because I think that people can see when you're passionate about something.
That's a solid answer. Who is your favorite designer of all time?
Of all time?
All of the time.
I will say that as a young kid, and still actually today, I study so much. And that's something that for all the designers out there, like I am constantly on YouTube looking up all of these different shows and studying them. I mean, recently, like I've been obsessed with Justin Sullivan, who did Cedar Park the last few years, you know, just looking at it and just like how it all connects. I just think that he is like beyond. Growing up, it was Jeff Robleski, you know, watching Franklin Central and then Warren Central. I mean, I just really always idolized what he did. And the fact that like, whether you love it or hate it, I mean, he has consistently been good. You know what I mean? Like he's consistently been able to produce shows that I just I find appealing. But of all time, that's so hard. There's literally so many because, again, I'm such a nerd. You know, I am. I just, you know, they're... Whoever did like Madison Scouts in the late 90s, like Power Pizzazz and all that jazz, Pirates of Penzance. That design team.
Yeah.
Woof. You know, like, you know, whoever did like Phantom 89.
Right.
You know, whoever did, what is it? The Skyriders from Kansas.
Yeah.
That did, you know what I mean? Like, I might not necessarily know them. I mean, there's just so many people. Like, I'm completely fascinated by the way in which people arrive at their product, you know, at the process. And I don't, I'll say this. I also don't read like autobiographies, unfortunately, because I have like the worst ADHD. So like I've switched to books on tape, but we're still working on that one. But you know what I mean? Like it's true. I listen to like Game of Thrones. That's like a commitment.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So I just think there's so many people that I don't think I would be able to nail that down. You know, I idolize and try to credit so many different avenues of this activity because I think, again, I could look at things and say, that's not good, or I could look at things and say, why does that work? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. So I don't think that I can say one way or another. But I will say, you know, I love what Alan Spaeth does from a production and aesthetic standpoint. I mean, Flower Mound has been incredible, but like he was in my circuit designing for Lincoln Way when I was in high school. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's so many of those people that I grew up with and I continue to like just watch, and it's crazy. I mean, the weirdest thing, even like with Origins doing so well, I didn't know that you like got invited to the advisory board. So we get this email and I show up and we're in this room and I just, you know, I've had this conversation with so many people, but like, these are all people. Like suddenly you have to like vote for like the state of the activity, but you're like standing in a room. Like first you have to process the fact that literally so many people that you have like studied, like you're like, I can tell you what you would do next year. You know what I mean? Like, I can tell you what in 2004 you did in the ballad.
Right.
Like
yeah.
These are things that like, you know, they look at you and they're like,
yeah.
Nice to meet you, kid, you know, but like, there's so many people. Yeah. I mean, it's so diverse. I think that that's the beauty of it.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. That's a nice political answer. Not naming names, but naming all the names.
I named some names. I mean, again, Jeff Robleski, Warren Central, you know, I grew up like, Danny Wiles at Avon. Uh-huh. I mean, like, I even like, I used to hear about, Vinnie Monticelli, you know, the Bishop Kearney guy. Uh-huh. I heard that he used to like lock himself in a closet until he would like come up with show themes, you know, for Bishop Kearney. There's just all these stories. It's just, there's not one person that I'm like, this is the greatest. You know, I learn even today, you know, I have the privilege, you know, I work with Jason Robb. I work with Jeremy Spicer. I work with incredibly talented people. Mm-hmm. I was going to end the word with incredible, but I added the Lee
word,
you know, but like, I would just work with so many people. So like, I don't think that I could just look and be like, this is my favorite.
Yeah.
I think that my aesthetic is camp. You know, personally, I do like things that are campy. It's not the only aesthetic that I enjoy. But you know, Tim Newbern, you know, what he does, super campy. And and I love that. You know, I think that, you know, there's just, I could go through it and tell you so many choreographers, you know, right now, if I had to come out of retirement in March, I would march in Vue. You know, I think that that's such a unique and interesting voice in the activity. And I think, again, it's just, going back to it, it's about identity. You know, I think that the designers I like are designers that have a clear voice and weren't afraid to sometimes stray from what might be competitively successful for what might be creatively authentic.
I love that because that's what I do all the time. Who is one designer or performer or teacher that we should all be listening to?
I mean, I will go back. I think that if anyone could take a seminar on programming, I think that you should take that from Justin Sullivan. I really do. I met him like not even as a programmer. We worked together at Spirit of Atlanta. But being able to become friends with him and like seeing his process, it's just so fascinating. You know, being able to watch Cedar Park, there's just something about it that I just think it's just so much more than marching band. It's, you know, it's theatrical. It's it's thorough. And I mean, I really do think right now that like he is one, and I've said this to him many times, but like, I just think that he's the next best thing. You know, I think that, you know, he's already done so much for being so young. But I definitely think that that's something, you know, he's at Hebron now, as a color guard director, not as the designer, but, I think that, that's a person to look out for. I mean, there's, what was the question?
Who should we be listening to? It's kind of like the who's out there that we don't know about yet, or maybe that isn't being praised like they normally should. And you mentioned Justin.
Yeah, I think Justin's so great. I think, you know, there's several people that, like, I think there's a choreographer, his name's David Seam. He works on the Blue Devils staff. And okay. I didn't even know he's been writing for Blue Devils for the last few years. We marched together as well.
Oh, okay.
But, like, now being able to go back and, like, identify his work, I was like, wow. That's incredible. There's just so many. I mean, the cool thing about living in Austin is that there's specifically, like, in Texas, because, I mean, the budget's there,
yeah,
that there are so many people that are younger that are able to kind of foster their craft in Texas. And so I just think that there's too many that I would be able to say this person or that person. But I definitely think that Justin is a phenomenal designer. Mm-hmm. I think that not enough people know him, and more people should.
Selfishly, I will say, stop moving to Austin. Our city can't handle you. Traffic is awful. And if you move to Pflugerville, Leander, Round Rock, Cedar Park, you do not live in Austin. No offense. Do you live in Austin?
Yeah, I mean, technically, good. I'm in Austin.
Good. Thank you. I'm tired of all the posers. All right. Jeffrey, when have you felt the most starstruck?
Oh, that's so hard. I feel like this is a question that I would have wanted to have so I could have prepared an answer.
No early preparation.
When have I felt so starstruck?
Drop a six, or what does he say? Toss a six and roll on the ground. It's going on the show.
All right.
What we're doing right here.
Thanks, April. When have I felt so starstruck? Well, I feel like a lot of the times when I've met some of the most famous people in activity, I was just so young that I didn't know any better that I probably should have been, you know, like when I had the ability to work with Greg Lagola at the Cadets, you know, I feel like that's someone that I would have been like, and now, you know, I'm like, I'm actually like that now when I'm not top I am
right,
than yeah, when I was. I don't even, I mean, truthfully, I just think walking into that advisory board meeting, I got to meet Tim Mikan. Mm-hmm. One, that dude is awesome. But you know what I mean? Like, I've been watching those shows for so long. I mean, like, getting to meet Rick Subel. I mean, just, I don't even know. Like, right. I feel starstruck all the time because, again, like, I'm just such a nerd. So I just, like, I see these people. They probably have no idea who I am. But I'm just like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
In 1996, you did this. You know? Like, it just, I'm trying to think of, like, the last.
It was probably when you walked in the door about an hour ago. That was the last time you felt
starstruck.
When
I saw the dog.
Oh, yeah. Smaller. Well, when anybody meets smaller, they're starstruck.
It's an adorable dog. Yeah, I can't remember, like, recently, because I feel like because I'm very fortunate and I'm able to work with so many people in this area that I kind of see everyone already, if that makes sense. But just a lot of the time, I think when I... Yeah, I think the last time I was starstruck was definitely that meeting, because I feel like I got to meet so many people that I don't necessarily see. I mean, like at WGI, you know, that if they're not in my class or if they're from the West Coast or the East Coast, we don't really get to see them competitively here.
Right.
So it was kind of putting faces with people that I've known for so long, you know? Yeah. Oh, I will say this. I did get to meet Cecil Crabtree. He is in El Paso. He used to do Americas, and he's at Pebble Hills right now.
Yeah, yeah.
I met him in the Valley. I was doing a camp at San Benito, I believe, and he was doing a camp at Harlingen.
Okay.
And I think this exact same situation happened where I was just like, I studied the Americas for hours. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, I know exactly what you'll do. So that was really, really cool for me. And we still talk to this day, which is awesome. I'll actually be in El Paso next week for Hank. So I'm going to hopefully grab a drink with him. But
and by drink, you mean you're going to go to Chico's Tacos with him, right? Have you been there?
I've never been to El Paso.
Never?
Never.
Oh my God. Okay. First of all, don't listen to Jeremy Spicer or Mike Howard. Chico's Tacos is the bomb. They're beef flautas that are like in a boat of a tomato sauce mixed with cheese. They're open 24 hours. If you find that you might have been imbuing a little too much, it's a fine food to enjoy after you've eaten, or you can do it the next morning. It's good all time. So anyway, there's plenty of different establishments. He would probably know of it. Chico's Tacos, you should go visit.
Well, I'm super lactose intolerant, so I don't think that would be good for anyone.
Hey, just take
I
even a pill just before it, right?
Look at cheese Gino and my
something? I don't know.
My butt is like the 1812 overture.
You're specifically referring to the canons in the 1812 War, which are correct.
It's the melody. Not the... No, literally, it's like...
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Fart music. That will be my next EP.
I'm going to have to click the explicit button now. Jeffrey, what item would you die to get your hands on if it went up for auction?
I have no idea.
There's nothing that in the history of the world, pageantry related or not, that you were like, I would love to have that sitting on my coffee table.
No.
Really?
Yeah. There's nothing. I mean, with Amazon nowadays.
you can buy anything.
No, truthfully, you know, I'm very blessed. I have everything that I could ever want right now in my life. I mean, other than, you know, student loan forgiveness.
Wow.
but like, no, I live a very blessed life. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want for much right now. I mean, I have what I need, and I think it's more important to have people than it is to have things, if that makes sense. So
that's a solid answer.
Yeah. So I think I'm very people rich. But no, I don't think there's not like, you know, this painting at the Louvre I would have loved to have. Mm-hmm. No. If I could have anything, oh my God, it would be like a street falafel from St. George Square.
Oh.
King David Square. Is that it?
I don't know.
I should know this. It was like right outside my work.
You were there.
Yeah.
Wow.
I would have good Middle Eastern food, because that's the one thing I'll tell you. Austin, there's nowhere close that's
sure
tastes like it.
I wouldn't know.
But no, there's not like a single item.
Wow. That's cool. What is your worst habit?
I have so many.
Well, which one's the worst?
One, I bite my nails, so that's terrible.
Oh, that's the worst thing ever.
Oh, my God.
Ever.
Have you seen this?
No. Oh, they're like they're nubs.
Oh, yeah, basically. Like, I have to get something to, like, scratch. My anxiety is bad.
I didn't mean to laugh at you.
What's one of my worst... what was that? What's one of my worst...
What's your worst habit?
I think that I'm very critical. You know, I think I don't want to be like, this is my best and my worst. But like, I feel like I'm very critical. I think that sometimes the way in which I communicate with people, I'm very business oriented. And so I think that sometimes it kind of puts a barrier between getting to know me a little bit better, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Because I think that the way in which I come off to people sometimes, like, I'm definitely a no-nonsense person. Like, I will tell you how it is. And sometimes I feel like some people, they just need a little bit more cushion, if that makes sense, before you say something. You know, like, sure. Some people need that compliment sandwich. And uh-huh. Especially, like, when I'm in the zone, like, that's just not, you know, like, I'm not being... I always say this, you know, I don't think that a true friend is a friend that has to agree with everything. Right. You know, yeah. I think that a lot of people think that, like, oh, well, if you don't agree with me, then you're not really then you're not my friend, you know? And I think that for me, I don't have a problem telling people when I disagree with them. And I think that that is really hard, especially in the day and age we live in, mm-hmm. For people to kind of get. And I think that they misconstrue that, you know? I think that a lot of times people mistake my passion for aggression, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. You know, like, when I'm teaching, like, I am teaching, you know, I will, like, read a room for filth. But, like, I think that, like, that's my worst habit, because I think that, unfortunately, I have a hard time translating that sometimes that comes from a good place, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So,
well, that's solid. Yeah. What is your life's motto?
So I'm going to give a twofold answer to this. So on my emails that I send, I have like a tagline at the end. It's this great quote from, a fashion editor named Deanna Vreeland. And it says, you know, I'm going to paraphrase, but it's like the only constant in life is the only continual. No, the only constant in life is a continual renewal of inspiration. So I think that that's definitely something that I live by. I mean, especially in an activity where so many people, I mean, just in general in this day and age, so many people talk about burnout, mm-hmm. you know? And mm-hmm. so, you know, it's like, well, how do you get inspired? You know, how do you do that? And I think that that, again, that translates not just in Color Guard, but, you know, in life, you know what I mean? Like, there are days that people just don't want to get up, you know? And it's like, how do you find that? And I think that that's something that I carry with me. But the second part of this, I'm going to say, is I always find this really interesting. So I used to tour people around Israel for a program called Birthright. If you don't know what that is.
Did you listen to the Evan Van Doren episode? He went and did Birthright.
Yeah, he did.
He talked a whole chunk about it. So this, you're the second person. And you gave tours. That's insane.
Yeah, I was on staff. I was not the tour guy.
Gotcha.
I was on staff.
Well, go for it. Let's talk more about it from a different perspective now.
So, you know, I would go, and especially I staffed an LGBT trip through a trip organizer called Young Judea. And, you know, we had all these participants that talked about the way in which they enacted their religion, and so much of it was based on scripture, I guess you could say, or teachings. And for me, the way in which I enact my religion, or I would say the motto I live by, is it's so important to put kindness into the world. You know, I think that the way in which, I think the truest form of spirituality is being good to others, you know, and I think that a lot of that delves into the idea of the Kabbalah, mm-hmm. Or Jewish mysticism, which is actually like kind of Hindu myth, like theology and things like that. There's just so much that it actually, you can almost find it in every religion in some aspect. But I think that like a motto that I live by is just, you know, not to like steal it from Ellen, but like I do think that it's about being kind to people. Sure. You know, I think that it's about being there for people and doing what's right. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's definitely something that my parents taught me. I think that's something that I keep with me to this very day.
That's awesome. That's solid. Last serious question. What advice would you offer to your 18-year-old self?
Stop talking. Oh, no, seriously.
Yeah.
When I was 18, I remember being at SpinFest in 2009. I think that I would have been maybe 20 then, so just maybe a little bit older. Mm-hmm. I should know my age, right? you know, I had this, my caption at Emma Martinez, who is a phenomenal woman. And she turned to me and she said, don't grow up too quickly. You know, and it's something that, you know, I wanted so badly to like design and to create. And I had my notebook and I wanted to get out there and I wanted to do all this stuff that I feel like I missed out on so much getting here. You know, and it's taken me so long of so many hours of introspection to realize how I come off to people, you know, and all these things that I wish I would have done different. So I think, first of all, I would say stop talking, you know, because I thought I talked a lot and I voiced my opinions. And sometimes probably most of the time, they were just very unwarranted, if that makes sense. Like nowadays I go back and I apologize to people and I'm like, I really like, you know, I remember specifically, I actually just wrote an apology, but like I idolize what Michael Shapiro does, you know, like I just think that he is, he would be that person. Between him and Adam Sage, like studying what they do, those are two people that I really draw a lot of inspiration from. But I said so many things back then that like, you know, and it's a small community and I don't know if he ever heard them, but I apologized to him only recently about it, but it's just things that I have to live with, you know, like I just wish that I might've kept some opinions to myself and realized that, you know, things change, you know, and where that came from in me, you know, that place, like so many young kids, it just came from such a place of insecurity, you know what I mean? And feelings of inadequacy. Mm-hmm. And so I think I would just tell myself to chill out and to appreciate what I have at the moment. Because so many things, you know, is Zydeco or even Interplay, you know, I left Interplay on really bad terms. And now I absolutely love Derek and what he does and what he's able to bring to youth, you know. And I go back and every time I see him, I'm just like, I'm so sorry. You know, he's probably going to be like, you've been apologizing for 10 years, you know. But like the fact is like there's just so many times I look back, I'm like, wow, I really took that for granted.
So what's next for Jeffrey?
A lunch date at Tataya.
Oh.
With my roommate. What's next for me? That's a great question. Well, currently, I just accepted, so I'm going to be backup spinning with Latrice Royale at the Drag Queens of Christmas when it comes to Austin. So peep me December 19th at the Moody Theater.
Whoa, that's huge. That's a big deal.
Yeah, my anxiety is already like an 11. Again, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even think the choreography is going to be that hard, but just the fact that I will be in front of people, I mean, it's just a performance anxiety. But I'm preparing for the winter. Mm-hmm. I mean, my winter calendar is basically solidified, so yeah. Contracts are out. I've actually started. I've reached out to all my fall clients already, and I'm accepting. I'm accepting new clients for next year on a programming standpoint, or basis, I should say. Yeah. So I'm already working on next fall. So, you know, I'm preparing that catalog mm-hmm. of things that I find to be creatively inspirational and hopefully I can bring to the field. I'm studying shows this current season. You know, I'm seeing what works, you know, trends in activity. Yeah, I mean, basically a lot of work things for sure. That's basically what's on the feature right now.
I look forward to all those phone calls from you replacing arrangers that aren't working out. Is there anything you want to plug, Jeffrey?
Well, I definitely want to plug my website.
You should talk about it.
Go www.sperlingdesigns.com. Sperling Designs. Design, create, inspire. Sperling Designs is the one. No, I'm just kidding. Definitely my website, though I do feel like most of my business is word of mouth. I mean, I would just say the one thing is regardless of perception, I don't feel like I have any B or C or D list clients. I'm very passionate about what I do. I mean, my father was a hard worker and I am my father's son. So I think that I take a lot of pride in what I do. So if you are tired of the same old thing, or if you feel like your program could use an update, I guess you could say, or just a different look, I would be honored for the opportunity to be able to work with you. I also want to plug Origins Color Guard. We're doing an apparel fundraiser pretty shortly. So check that out on originscolorguard.org, and then look for them at a local TCGC show starting at Westwood on January 25th, or at a WGI Texas show or at World Championships.
Jeffrey, it has been a pleasure to have you here today. You are an absolute delight. I hope everyone remembers, if you want apples, you have to shake the trees. This episode of Sketchbook Podcast is hosted by, edited by, and produced by me, Daniel Montoya Jr. in Austin, Texas. Our logo is created by John Suh of Purpose Designs, and our music is provided by Epidemic Sound. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SketchbookPod, and to send us questions, comments, suggestions, or concerns, email us at sketchbookpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and as always, I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid. They've got a million toys at Toys R Us that I can play with. I don't want to grow up, because baby, if I did, I couldn't be a Toys R Us kid.